And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. And it's 9:15 because I, like so many of the rest of you, discombobulated with the weather and with the traffic and all that kind of stuff. If you're in and around Letterkenny, you probably sailed to work in Inishowen. But anyway, we are here for the next 2 hours and 45 minutes, and we've got an awful lot to pack in. The lines are open, as always, 086 60 25,000. That's your WhatsApp and texts, 086 60 25,000. Or you can give us a call, 074 91 25,000. And if you prefer to email, it is comments@highlandradio.com. What do you want to talk about? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Let's have a run through the papers this morning. Mostly take the front pages, as I haven't really had an opportunity to scan through them as such. But we'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. Council seeks extra revenue of 25 million. Donegal County Council will ask councillors to approve a 5% rise in the commercial rates when the annual budget meeting takes place in Lifford on Friday. So if you're in business, this potentially could affect you. It's common, or in common with recent years, the Tyrconnell Tribune has not been facilitated with the Book of Estimates. However, that's not a problem. Overall, revenue expenditure for next year will increase from 198,910,781 euro in 2025 to an estimated 224 plus change. In what's been the most difficult of years for business and trading, the increased revenue demand of 25 million will come as a shock for cash-strapped SMEs trying to survive. And of course, there's other costs coming in, not least auto-enrolment pension, adding 1.5% really effectively to the wage bill of businesses, which is going to be a struggle for many. We'll track that story, of course, as well. We don't feel safe is the headline in the Derry People Donegal News. A Letterkenny taxi driver has spoken of how he's been left with a scar above his left eye and had his vehicle attacked with a billhook in separate incidents while working the night shift. The man told the Donegal News that many local taxi vehicles are now fitted with inward and outward facing cameras for drivers' protection following a number of violent episodes. The taxi driver's comments come in the wake of a report published this week highlighting concerns of safety raised by taxi drivers. And I do know we have quite a number of taxi drivers that listen to this show, which is great. If it has become more dangerous to do your job, whether it's in Letterkenny or wherever it is, we'd be more than happy to give you a platform to talk about that too here. 086 60 25,000. That is the WhatsApp and the text number. The Derry News, Danny does it again. Derry athlete and mental health champion Danny Quigley has completed a remarkable 200-mile run through the Sahara Desert to raise funds for local charities. Fair play to him. That's unbelievable. On to the Nationals now, and on to the Irish Independent. And apparently the government is being forced to bring in emergency regulation to stop companies attempting to subvert the new auto enrolment pension. Almost 750,000 workers are set to be signed up to the My Future Fund auto enrolment pension from early January. It's been described as the biggest shake-up in the pension landscape in the history of the state. But it's emerged, however, that some companies are trying to avoid having their staff signed up to My Future Fund because they do not want to handle the administrative burden and cost involved. These companies are attempting to undermine the scheme by forcing their staff to join an inferior in-house pension scheme. So they're coming and saying, right, look, here's an in-house one. And that would obviously negate their need to auto-enroll people. Is that something that you've come across? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. The Metrolink is a big project. It's Dublin's 10T, really. It's one of these projects that has been talked about for generations. Everybody accepts the need for it, but the closer you get to actually starting it, the more complicated it becomes. Now, I hope that's not the same with the 10T, that it'll be a much more simple project. But say the Metrolink, and I'll read in here at the moment, it's going to cost 10 billion. Now, that's a three-year-old estimate. It's going to require 8,000 workers. The majority of those workers have to come from outside the state. That is a fact, not me opining. And that's half of the homelessness number in this country as it is. So it makes it very difficult. So they're going to have to build effectively a village to house the workers before the Metrolink can begin. Now, that's not unusual. If you look at in Dubai or what have you, they would most of their construction workers have traditionally been Indian people or people from other countries around them, and they do build these spaces to house them. But we're not Dubai, are we? So this could be one of those. We could be on a train from Letterkenny to Derry, I think, before you're on a Metrolink to Dublin Airport. But anyway, Metrolink planners are grappling with how to house foreign workers who will be among the 8,000 strong team needed to build the rail line. A spokesperson for the project said yesterday a dedicated team has been set up to consider the logistical challenges associated with accommodating a workforce while Ireland faces housing supply issues. And also to those, we need workers for other stuff that's being done. The Irish Daily Mail, their front page: the government's on high alert for a fresh surge in asylum seekers arriving here. It follows an announcement by the British government that it plans to make it much harder to claim asylum in the UK. Cabinet sources told the Irish Daily Mail that 87% of asylum seekers are already coming into the country via the UK, and they fear a major new upsurge. 87%. I didn't realise this figure was as high as it is. 87% of asylum seekers already coming into this country via the UK. Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan will bring tough new immigration policies to Cabinet on Tuesday. Speaking in the Shannon last night, Fine Gael TD Colin Brophy, Junior Justice Minister with responsibility for migration, said that the changes had the potential to change the flow of migrants between Ireland and the UK. But how do they do that, actually, out of interest? Because if they're coming from the UK into Ireland, are they coming via the north? And, you know, how do you stop thousands of people making their way across the border north to south? I don't know. So I wouldn't like to figure it out. The Irish Farmers Journal has an exclusive: Brazil exposed, illegal antibiotic trade uncovered, zero medicines recorded, no database to track sales, tagging and traceability issues, health professor shocked. Hopefully we'll get a word with someone from the Farmers Journal on that story there, because that does have serious ramifications. And if it is the case too, it's very unfair on Irish farmers. The front of the Irish Sun: son on mum killed charge. You might have heard of this case of a woman killed and her husband seriously injured in County Cork. Well, a man has appeared in court charged with the murder. He's a Cork man, David Gallagher, 25, from Shrewsbury Downs. Ballinlough was remanded into custody. Sheila and Brian Gallagher both suffered multiple stab wounds during that horrific incident. And that is also the front of the Irish Daily Mirror and the Irish Daily Star. 086 60 25000. That is your WhatsApp and text number here for the 9 till noon show. Just be careful, by the way, if you are out on the roads, because there are little spots whereby it's it is very, very, you know, the usual spots. Locksalt's pretty dodgy at the moment, back of Argyll, etc. Those are the spaces that you need to be careful, and it'll be like that for the next wee while. Right, okay, so Donald Trump has signed a bill approving the release of files related to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The US Justice Department now has 30 days to release the documents. It's after both houses of Congress overwhelmingly voted in favor of disclosing the files. Larry Donnelly is a Boston attorney, University of Galway law lecturer, and political columnist at thejournal.ie and bostonirish.com. Good morning, Larry.
Great to be with you, Greg.
Great to speak to you, and lovely to see you again. So, why this about turn? Because for a very long time, Donald Trump was saying, look, this is a Democrat hoax. There's nothing to see here. This is a distraction. And he didn't want these out at all. He seemed to have a bit of a spat with another high-ranking Republican. Talk to me about that. And was that the catalyst for his change of view?
Well, the trajectory on this one is interesting, Greg, in the sense that when he campaigned for the White House last year, he had pledged that he would release the Epstein files. Then all of a sudden, when he got elected, he said, look, there's nothing to see here. Let's just move on. And he fought and he resisted the whole way. Yet what happened was a small group of Republicans, including the person who I think you're referring to, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is very much on the hard right, but somebody who was closely aligned to Donald Trump, they wouldn't back down. They said, we are standing with the survivors of the horrible things that Jeffrey Epstein and his associates did. And the thing was, Trump's people knew that they weren't alone, that there were other Republicans who were going to vote to release the files. And this is really significant because it is the first time since Donald Trump has entered public life and indeed took over the Republican Party that he has had to back down. So it's a very significant moment in time.
But it does raise the question why he was resisting the release of them. You know, I mean, this was a big thing, the Epstein files, the Epstein files, the Epstein files. You know, even J.D. Vance, whatever's there, get them out. And obviously it raised suspicion as to, is what's in these files damaging to Trump?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think the way that the Trump White House handled it once he got elected was really kind of odd because, I think what he took the view was, I have a huge mandate here. I can dictate things. I don't even want to have any smell of being associated with this. But at the same time, I think those people who are anticipating or hoping for a smoking gun here, they're going to be disappointed. I'd be very, very surprised if there is anything really damaging to Donald Trump in these files. And I say that for two reasons. Number one, because the way Washington, D.C. works, it surely would have come out by now. There is no question about it. It would have come out during the Biden administration. The second thing is that if you look at the wording of the statute, the wording of this new law, and you look at the role of Pam Bondi, the attorney general, she will do everything within her power to shield Donald Trump from any devastating revelations. So I don't think there's going to be a smoking gun here, but I think Donald Trump overplayed his hand because he's used to having his way with fellow Republicans. And on this occasion, he was defied. And I suspect that this might be the last time congressional Republicans defy him.
But surely there is going to be people incriminated by these files. I mean, the investigations that have been ongoing, presumably there's would any videos or photographs that Epstein had in his possession, would they form part of this release?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see a massive, massive dump of documents, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pages, evidently. And given who Jeffrey Epstein associated with, there is no doubt that some very high-profile people are going to come to light and are going to be embarrassed. Indeed, some of them may be ruined by what comes out from this. Now, is it a possibility that Trump might have been shielding them with this demand? Possibly, but at the end of the day, Donald Trump is all about Donald Trump. So perhaps he was shielding them, but it will be interesting to see. And again, this cuts across the ideological spectrum. It cuts across politics, business, academia, culture, a whole range of different fields who associated with Jeffrey Epstein. And there's obviously an awful lot of people who are very, very nervous right now. And that's why I think both those four Republicans, whatever you think about their politics and what they've done beforehand, they deserve credit for signing on to this. And the survivors of everything, they deserve an awful lot of credit for putting themselves forward in not easy circumstances.
Yeah, the thing that I don't want to sound like Candace Owens or something along those lines, right? But you know, this sort of statements that we heard from Ghislaine Maxwell saying that, Ghislaine Maxwell saying that, Donald Trump had nothing to do with anything, and then, days later she ends up going into a really soft prison, right? Like, as I say, I hope I'm not conflating issues. But it all looks dodgy because, I mean, she obviously there were young people being transported to this, or she wouldn't have been in prison at all.
Yeah, well, what I think is abundantly clear, and this is obviously deeply embarrassing to the president, is he knew an awful lot more than he let on. Even the what was released by Democrats last week, he knew. He can say he didn't know what was going on, and he's claimed that he did know what was going on with young girls. That is the reason why he kicked him out of the club. The extent that they maintained the association after he knew about what Jeffrey Epstein was up to, of course, That could potentially be damaging. But, you know, if we look back on a whole host of things that we thought would be the death knell for Donald Trump, none of them has proven to be. But I will say, again, he's weaker now than he ever has been, because even though he's only a year into his first year of his presidency, he still is slowly on his way to being a lame duck. And again, his party has defied him. So he's probably more vulnerable now than he ever has been.
The American public will demand action beyond the release of these files, weren't they? Do you know, the idea that, you know, people can be very heavily implicated in very wrongdoing, but still walk among us as if nothing ever happened. The public appetite for that surely has completely run out.
Absolutely. And I think this is why, one of the reasons why an awful lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill were going to vote to release the files. That's because Republicans are different now. They're not the party of the elite necessarily anymore. They're the party of an awful lot of regular people. And if there's anything that regular, ordinary Americans, many of whom feel like they've been left behind, share, it's that they despise the elites. And if there are elites, and I expect that there will be, whose names feature, then I think you're going to see a demand for serious heads to roll. And that will be very, very interesting to watch it all in play. I think one of the most prescient things Donald Trump said was this summer when he posted on Truth Social that Jeffrey Epstein is the man who won't die. That is, his legacy in his life, as miserable and horrible as the stuff he did, it's long going to outlive him. And it's very possible that he could take down some very big, high-profile people, even though he's gone.
Is there any way to sort of have some of this information redacted? Because I presume if some of the material could be used as future investigations or investigations that might be launched, it could end up tying that up. Is that a possibility? And who would that be benefiting?
Well, we see that the Trump administration has already announced a series of new investigations on a whole different array of different fronts, which, again, this is one of the reasons why the attorney general will have some wiggle room here in terms of flat out refusing to produce some documents, redacting some documents. So all of that is in the ether. And that's why, again, I could be surprised, because I never cease to be surprised by what the Trump administration does. But that's why they have 30 days to get this out. It may take every bit of those 30 days for the attorney general to plow through, and her team to plow through those documents and decide which ones they're going to go out and which ones are not. Because, again, there is that amount of wiggle room to sort of, I suppose, you know, protect to some extent the president, but perhaps to also protect some of the president's allies.
Yeah, it's also blooming murky, isn't it? Could this be, could we be edging towards the end of it now, Larry, do you think?
No, I mean, I think this is going to run and run, you know, again, because I think there are going to be, and it's going to run beyond politics because of some of the people who I think are going to be named in these files. And I think that the American people, this is one thing that they've been consistently alive to. The extent to which they tie it to Donald Trump and the extent to which it becomes a negative for Republicans in the midterms next year, that will be fascinating to watch, as will what prominent Democrats might also be revealed in part of these. We have heard murmurings about former President Clinton, so watch that space as well.
And just finally, what does this mean for politics in America? What I'm reading from what I absorb really is that, you know, whilst globally, you know, people might have to concede that Donald Trump has done quite a bit of work in trying to, you know, stop conflicts or what have you. But at home, people don't really seem to care in great numbers. It's like, well, what about us? What about America? What about America first? And then you talk about the midterms coming up next year, and then high profile infighting, not just politically, but actually in the media, which I think is really quite interesting. What does this mean, do you think, for American politics as a whole? When does he become a lame duck if he's not already? And what does the future hold?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but what I will come back to is the basics and the bread and butter. And Donald Trump got elected mainly because of the inflation and cost of living issues. That was primarily the anger at the Biden administration, the anger at Democrats over that is one of the biggest reasons why Donald Trump was elected. he has failed, at least in the common perception, he has failed to solve that cost of living crisis. The price of everything remains very high. That is sure to benefit Democrats in the midterms, one would think. But the issue becomes the Democrats are also very unpopular if you look at the opinion polling. So it's a very murky picture right now. And your question as to when Trump becomes a lame duck, I don't know. My tendency is to think he's on the way there already. But I think you write off Donald Trump at your peril because he enjoys huge loyalty still among a very big swathe of Americans who he can deploy to his own political ends.
But if this is further muddied, his potential links with Epstein, is that not just the red line for those very people that you talk of, that they'll back him politically, you know, with international domestic issues, but if his relationship with Epstein gets any murkier, it could be problematic for him? Could that be the one thing that could trip him up?
Yeah, I mean, it could be problematic for him, but the issue is, will it be problematic for his party's standard bearers in the midterms next year? And what often happens in politics in the United States these days is voters aren't picking somebody because they find them inspiring or great. They pick them as the least bad option. And the question in that context becomes the extent to which Democrats are going to be able to get their act together and focus in on that affordability agenda, which we saw work so well in the recent elections, and get the focus off the culture war issues, which Republicans can exploit so well to their benefit. So it's a murky picture right now.
And very finally, do you think the release of these files will expose any external influences or string pulling in relation to it? You know, obviously you would have heard the speculation of various countries or officials being involved in blackmail and all that type of stuff.
Quite possibly, quite possibly. The question on that front will become the wiggle room that the president and his attorney general will have, and the extent to which they will try to redact or not release documents on the basis of national security or other imperatives. But there absolutely is the potential for all of that to happen. So when they're released, they will be dissected with a fine tooth comb, and it'll be fascinating to see what's unearthed.
Yeah, indeed. Listen, Larry, thank you so much for your time. It is genuinely greatly appreciated. Have a good day. We'll watch with interest, of course. Larry Donnelly there, who's a lecturer at the University of Galway in law. He's a political columnist as well with thejournal.ie and bostonirish.com. What do you think? 08660 25000. Now, we're joined on the programme by Kathleen Murray, a campaigner to see the Animal Rescue Centre reopened and PRO of the Save Donegal Animal Centre. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. And of course, we're covering this story quite extensively, you know, as its closure became obvious and then actually happened. And we've heard from the people that own it right now, what their intentions are. Where is the campaign as far as you see it right now?
Well, right now, at the moment, we have contacted pretty much everybody there is to be contacted. And really, there's no backup or help. Donegal County Council are actually very good. They met with us and we discussed the whole issue. And they have enough on their plate at the moment with the dog warden issue. And things. So they can't really do much for the centre at the moment, but they're supporting us in our efforts to get it back because they also think that it's not right what's happened, you know.
Yeah, because obviously, and quite rightly so, there is a great sense of ownership of this project, this infrastructure. But what are the ISPCA saying now? Because the last time I spoke to them, they said that this property now goes into the ownership of the overarching company now, that they really effectively are planning maybe to create a centre further south, that they do see this centre in the future being used for the purpose it was before. A lot going on there, a lot of different strands. Kathleen, where do you think it stands?
Well, where I see it standing at the moment is they are still sort of pushing it down the road. They haven't come clear with what exactly their plans are. They're still waffling around the same lines they gave out months ago about financial difficulties and it wasn't viable and whatnot. And if that was the case, if that was really the case, which I doubt, but if that was really the case, then they could have brought it to the attention of charities in the county, people in the county, and handed it back again and offloaded it off their hands, and we could have taken it from there. They didn't have to keep going if it was going to be, you know, absorbing money and they're getting nothing out of it. They could have just let it go. But they have handed it over. It is now the property of the NSPCA, which it was never meant to be, ever. Because when that was handed over in good faith, they were supposed to, it was for them to keep it safe, look after it, and it was for the animals of Donegal. But that hasn't happened. They've gone back on that. And they're not taking any responsibility for that.
What are the pathways to it reopening, right? So let's sort of get down to the brass tacks. Could they could the ISPCA, the DSPCA, could they sign some sort of a nominal lease agreement and it be funded and operated locally through fundraising or what have you? Would you like to sit down with them, a committee to sit down with them and see what price, considering how much money was donated from Donegal, what price they might be happy enough to release this asset for? Like, in reality, what are the pathways to this reopening?
Well, we seem to be left with only one pathway now, because we have contacted them. They've come back with the same two or three lines, or they don't answer. And so there, it's very hard to actually strike a deal with somebody who won't even answer an email. And they have their own ideas and their own plans, and they're just hedging for time and closing the ISPCA, basically. So then it all becomes the work of the NSPCA, who don't know anything about us or any previous verbal agreements or handshakes or promises or anything else. So it's just an asset to them, and they've taken everything out of it. They've come back a few times and taken everything they can, anything that's movable, out of it. So it doesn't look to me like they want to reopen the centre at all. And leasing it back from them would be an absolute joke, because they were handed that thing. Nobody leased it to them. It was handed to them, yeah. And they were to look after it, basically. So to lease it back would be like an absolute laughable.
Yeah, it'd be an insult to injury. So then someone then do they not needs to assist you guys or intervene or flex political influence, what have you, to get the NSPCA to look at the option of signing it back over to the community of Donegal and taking it from there. Is that then, you know, the most logical pathway, that this asset is returned to the people who primarily funded it, and the NSPCA has to take the hit on its asset book?
Yeah, and they're not even taking a hit, really, because it was never theirs to start with.
Yeah, but they're counting it now, right? So whatever its actual value is. Yeah. I know what you're saying, but in terms of bookkeeping, it's there.
Yes, okay. And they also would have gotten a lot out of it as well, through advertising and through handing it over as an asset and things. But we have had politicians stand up for us. We've had politicians read out questions in the Dáil, all to no avail. We've had so much, you know, support and help from everybody that can. The regulator, Charities Regulator, was even in the county recently, and we talked to them as well. And they spent an hour talking about conflict of interest and good faith and all the things that go with charities and all. And everything they talked about was related to this absolute issue. But yet when we talked to them afterwards, they said they could do nothing for us. So it all looks like everything has fallen on its face, and it looks like now it's just down to the people of Donegal to put their foot down, basically, and say enough is enough. You know, we would like to have this back, and just basically keep pushing until somebody thinks, okay, maybe we'll give it back, you know, because it's entirely in the ball's entirely in their court at the moment. We just have to keep basically asking for it and making people aware of what's happening. Mm. And that it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong what happened. You know, it's morally wrong. And that's something the regulator also talked a lot about, morals and ethical behaviour and whatnot. Yet they've done all, they've ticked all the boxes, and yet nobody is talking to them. Nobody is demanding anything from them. They're still getting away with it, and they're keeping the cards close to their chest. They're not answering as to what their actual plans are. So it's very hard to get through to people like that. So publicity it seems to be the only way that actually rattles them.
Yeah. so obviously, you've reached out all to the correct people, the politicians. You've sought clarity and what have you from the NSPCA, or even what this means in the context of the ISPCA and DSPCA's merger into the NSPCA. I want to. Has there been any? Is it measurable the impact this has had on animal welfare, Kathleen? Obviously, we're heading into a busier period now, right? Christmas, New Year. People will, believe it or not, people will get pets this Christmas and then realise that they can't keep them. And then January, February, March, we see it every year. But have we seen the impact of this closure yet on animal welfare in this region?
Yes, we definitely have. The existing charities, of which there are very, very few, there's only like two registered charities, basically, and they're inundated with calls for pets, cats, dogs, everything to be taken in. And right now, there's, because the centre catered to wildlife and, you know, a lot of cats and dogs as well, the centre's not there now. So what becomes of our wildlife? What's going to happen to our wildlife if somebody actually finds maybe a rabbit with a broken leg or something? That would have gone to the centre before, or, you know, something that's had a car accident or whatever. Now, what Longford are doing is they're, if somebody rings up the ISPCA looking for help, they say, bring it to Longford. So if somebody finds a kitten along the road that's been hurt, who is going to put that kitten in their car and drive all the way to Longford in reality?
It's not going to happen. It's not practical. No. And you actually might think it could be too unfair to be removing that animal potentially away from its owners. Let's say it slipped the house or something. That doesn't make sense. Kathleen, you can have a very busy committee and a very committed committee that has been formed, and I'm sure it is. But the truth is if you don't want me saying, and maybe you agree, that this is going to require a much wider buy-in. You know, you will only be able to do so much. There needs to be a greater public buy-in on this issue to back up what yous are doing.
Absolutely. We need everybody in the county to get behind us, because everybody's affected one way or the other. There are people with cats in their backyards right now that they're not happy with. There's people who have animals that they want to rehome. There's people who have dumped animals and they're on the side of the road. There's nobody to look after these animals now. There is nobody there because the charities are full. So everybody's going to be impacted, and they all need to get behind us for their own sake and for the sake of animals, and help us with this quest to try to get the centre back.
Okay, listen, thank you for your time. I wish you every success in that regard. That's Kathleen Murray, campaigner to see the Animal Rescue Centre reopened, and also public relations officer of the Save Donegal Animal Centre. So it's that issue not gone away. Right, just so that you know, that there has been a road incident. It's not a major one, which is good. It's at Duns of Illustrin. So in case you're coming that way, take care. The emergency services are on the scene, and I'm sure we'll quickly deal with that. Could you try and get someone from the IFA to discuss the Mercosur beef deal with Brazil? Headlines in the Farmers Journal say there is controlled use of hormones, antibiotics in South America. It appears our government's about to sign off on it shortly. A highly regulated industry will be destroyed. Very little information being given out. And it doesn't help, too, that over in Europe, MEPs with an interest in this are complaining that certain measures have been put in place to limit their ability to speak on the Mercosur deal. So it's seeming a little bit murky over there. We might chase that up. Certainly want to speak to someone from the Farmers Journal who did that investigation. And also, I wouldn't mind getting a line sort of on that EU angle either. So leave that with us. It is something I do personally want to dig into a little bit deeper. Just a quick mention that, because we have to take a break before the news, that we have a Renault Symbioz Techno. It's worth over €35,000, and it's part of Highland Radio's big Christmas draw. And it couldn't be easier to enter, by the way. You just head over to highlandradio.com and click win a car. A ticket's €15. Or you can get 5 tickets for €50. So there are 5 are cheaper if you buy 5. So you might buy 5 and gift them out, because you can gift them out to individuals. Or you might group in with friends and get them cheaper that way. It's completely up to you. So we also are likely to introduce some incentives, right, in the next week or two. So you want to be in nice and early so you could win that car or whatever else is up for grabs. And that draw will be made on the 23rd of November on this show. You can also give us a call right now on 07491 25000. We can help you out with your tickets or calling to us here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. And you could win this beautiful Renault Symbios Techno. It's worth over 35 grand and it's worth every shilling. It's fully specced out.